Okay, picture this. The thud of a heavy net hitting the wet deck of a boat. Ropes still dripping seawater. Dark ocean water.
Yeah, the classic sound of a fisherman's haul coming aboard.
Exactly. And as the catch spills out, all glistening and moving, something else rolls free. Something unexpected.
Right. Not a fish. Not the usual debris.
No, it's this peculiar warped metal cylinder.
Yeah.
Kind of glinting dully in the, you know, the weak light.
A solid object, clearly artificial, pulled up from who knows where. A real piece of a puzzle.
A puzzle from the deepest parts of our world. Welcome, everyone, to The Deep Dive.
Today, we're really plunging into some, well, startling sources, accounts that aren't easy to explain away.
We're focusing on a story centered around the Mariana Trench, pulling from sources like Beneath the Echo, Calyptra's Deep Mystery, and Don't Enter the Rift, a deep-sea legend at 10 kilometers.
Our mission, as always, is to navigate these accounts, try to pull out the most compelling pieces, and just explore what they might mean for, well, our understanding of the unknown.
These sources claim, and it's a big claim, that they document an expedition where a diver came back with proof. Proof of something genuinely extraordinary from the Earth's abyss.
So we'll be looking at the fragments of evidence they present, these whispers of strange voices, and the frankly chilling implications.
What you're about to hear might challenge your ideas about what can exist down there, in the deepest, darkest corners of our planet.
It really invites you to reconsider the boundaries, you know, of the known and maybe even what's possible.
So it all kicks off with this accidental recovery, a message, literally, from the abyss.
Let's set the scene. It's 1986.
Yeah, 1986. You have a Filipino fisherman out in the Pacific, just doing his job, casting his net in this vast ocean.
Expecting the usual catch, right? Tuna, maybe something from the deeper waters.
Right. But as he hauls the net in, dripping seawater, and dumps the catch onto the deck, there's this thing, this object.
An anomaly. Something that just doesn't belong.
The sources describe it as a piece of the past. Something that logically just shouldn't be there.
It's this warped metal cylinder. Heavily corroded, you know, covered in marine growth after clearly being down there a long time.
But crucially, it still has U.S. military markings visible on it.
And that immediately tells you it's man-made. It connects it to some specific, probably official human activity, not just random ocean junk.
The sheer randomness of finding it, though, in the middle of the Pacific, it almost feels deliberate. Like it was meant to be found.
That's the intriguing part, isn't it? Like an object fighting its way back to the surface against all odds.
And what was inside this container, this cylinder, is maybe even more incredible.
Go on.
Against all odds, nestled inside, perfectly preserved, an intact short film reel.
Okay, stop right there. A film reel. Intact.
Well, yeah. Think about that. This thing was potentially down there for years, maybe decades. Subjected to what? Thousands of pounds per square inch of pressure?
Crushing pressure, yeah. Near freezing temperatures, constant saltwater corrosion.
And yet this delicate celluloid film, it survived. Perfectly preserved. It's almost miraculous.
Okay, from a scientific perspective, preserving film like that under those conditions, it's extraordinarily unlikely.
Right.
Deep sea environments are incredibly destructive. Organic materials like film emulsion, they break down fast. Bacteria, chemical reactions.
So the cylinder must have provided some serious protection.
It must have. Protection from the pressure, sure, and maybe the worst of the corrosion. But film itself is so fragile.
How could it have created such a perfect seal for so long? The sources don't really explain that, do they?
No, they don't specify the cylinder's exact makeup or the sealing mechanism, which honestly, just adds another layer to the mystery surrounding its survival. It's highly improbable.
My first reaction is just, how? How does something so fragile survive all that? It feels intentional, like it had to be found. But, okay, trying to be rational.
Right. Let's explore the rational first.
Are there plausible explanations? Mm-hmm. Maybe some super advanced alloy we don't know about? Some internal preservation method?
Those are possibilities, yeah. Perhaps it was built from something highly resistant, maybe classified tech. Or it might have contained an inert gas inside, preventing decay.
Or the conditions inside became unique, like no oxygen, no microbes.
That's another angle. If it's sealed perfectly, it might have created its own sterile microenvironment. But even then, the sheer amount of time involved, it points to either an amazing combination of factors or, well, something beyond standard tech.
So skepticism is warranted about how it survived.
Absolutely. But the key thing is it did survive. So regardless of the improbability, we have to look at what's on the film before jumping to conclusions about, you know, its origin or purpose.
Right. Analyze the content first. Let the discovery itself raise questions, but let the contents provide potential answers.
Precisely. We need to weigh the sensational find against whatever tangible information it holds.
Okay, so this cylinder seems to be a breadcrumb trail back to something specific. It takes us to May 1983.
Right, and a mission involving a vessel called the USS Calyptra.
And this wasn't just some routine survey dive. The sources are clear. It was a high-stakes test.
They were testing a prototype experimental capsule near the Mariana Trench.
Pushing the boundaries of deep-sea exploration at the time, they were aiming for depths around 10 kilometers. That's incredibly deep.
10 kilometers, yeah. That's nearly 33,000 feet. Venturing into a realm of absolutely crushing pressure, total darkness, a place few humans had ever directly experienced.
Understanding that context is key, isn't it? This wasn't just science for science's sake.
Probably not entirely.
Yeah.
An advanced experimental capsule suggests cutting-edge tech, likely with military or government backing, pushing into the deepest point on Earth.
High risk, high reward.
Inherently high risk,
mm-hmm.
And probably carrying significant national interests, which often means a layer of secrecy, especially if things go wrong or if something unexpected is found.
And then things did go wrong. Critically wrong.
Contact was lost.
Not just briefly. The sources say the Calyptra went silent for a staggering 72 hours.
3 full days. Imagine being on the surface support vessel, waiting, listening, nothing.
The tension, the uncertainty. It must have been immense.
Absolutely. And then the official record, the way it was filed.
Declared a technical accident. Just like that.
Which sounds neat and tidy, provides closure. But it also, you know, highlights how easily complex incidents can be simplified, maybe even covered up.
It paints a stark picture, doesn't it? This dramatic event, the loss of contact. We can almost visualize the Calyptra loss as this void in the official story.
It does. And that term, technical accident, it's a common bureaucratic label. It closes the book.
But a 72-hour silence with a prototype vessel in the Mariana Trench.
Right.
That sounds like more than just a leaky valve or a power failure.
It suggests something far more complex, potentially catastrophic or maybe strange. Technical accident can be a convenient way to avoid deeper questions, especially with experimental tech or in unexplored territories.
It effectively draws a curtain over what really happened. No further details shared publicly, at least.
Precisely. And this is where the cylinder found years later becomes so important it connects back.
If it was just a straightforward technical failure, a tragic loss down deep, why would this artifact, the cylinder with film inside, surface years later?
Exactly. It clashes directly with the finality of the technical accident explanation.
It hints that something else happened, something more complex, something that maybe couldn't be explained easily.
Something that managed somehow to send a message back from the abyss.
This juxtaposition, the official story, versus this tangible piece of evidence surfacing later, that's the heart of the mystery we're diving into.
Official records tell one story. Sometimes reality is messier, stranger. The film reel basically reopens a case that was officially closed.
It suggests the initial assessment was incomplete or maybe even deliberately simplified.
Perhaps because there was no conventional way to explain what actually occurred down there at the time, it implies a deeper, untold story.
Okay, let's get to the reel itself, Harker's footage. What did it actually show?
Imagine finally getting that reel developed, threaded onto a projector. The anticipation.
The room goes dark, the projector whirs, that old familiar clicking sound. And then the image flickers onto the screen.
You're instantly transported, right down to the ocean floor. We can almost see that flickering reel casting its light.
The sources say the footage is raw, unedited. It's like a direct feed from the diver's perspective.
Which gives it an immediacy, right? No polish, no narration added later, just what the diver saw and experienced, unfiltered.
The quality probably wasn't great either, right? Grainy, maybe distorted by the pressure, the limited light.
Likely, which probably only adds to the feeling of being there in that hostile alien place. Makes it more visceral.
And the central figure in this footage is Lieutenant James Harker.
Yeah.
A diver, right there on the seafloor.
We're seeing it through his eyes, essentially. Or at least through his helmet cam, presumably.
That first-person view makes what comes next feel incredibly immediate and unsettling.
Harker is our witness. His footage is the primary data point for what was down there. And as a trained diver,
you'd expect him to be a reliable observer, even under stress, used to underwater conditions.
Right. His presence grounds these potentially extraordinary claims in a real human experience.
And then the footage reveals something deeply disturbing.
The shadow.
Yeah. A massive, slow-moving shadow in the background. And the key detail, its shape, doesn't match any known creature.
Okay, that pushes us way beyond known marine biology.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What does that even mean for science if something like that exists? Something huge, unidentifiable at 10 kilometers down.
It introduces profound mystery. We think we have a handle on deep sea gigantism, strange adaptations, but no known shape. That suggests something fundamentally alien to our understanding of life.
It's like it challenges our whole system of classification, our zoology, maybe even basic biology.
A being like that operating at those depths, it would force a complete rethink of deep sea ecosystems, maybe even life itself.
And this leads us to the most critical part of the footage, Harker's final words, an urgent warning.
Captured right there on the film.
He shouts, "Their voice isn't sound, it's memory. Don't enter the rift."
Wow. Let's just pause on that. That single line. It's incredible. We should probably visualize Harker's line, "Their voice isn't sound, it's memory. Don't enter the rift." Just burned onto the screen.
Let's break it down. Their voice isn't sound. What could that possibly imply about communication down there?
It immediately throws out our primary mode of complex communication. If it's not sound waves hitting an eardrum, what is it?
Telepathy. Some kind of vibrational thing we can't hear. Direct mental transfer.
Those are the kind of lines you'd have to think along. It means communication happening on a channel we aren't naturally equipped to receive or maybe even comprehend.
Then the next part, it's memory. That's the really mind-bending bit.
Right. Communication not as words or symbols, but as direct experience, shared recall.
Imagine instead of telling someone about your day, you could just transmit the entire sensory experience, the sights, sounds, feelings, instantly.
That's the implication. Information isn't just sent and received. It's experienced by the recipient. It blurs the line between the communicator and the one receiving the communication.
So reality down there might be less about objective facts and more about shared consciousness.
It could suggest a non-linear, maybe even holographic way information works. Instantaneous transmission of vast, complex data sets or experiences, bypassing senses, maybe interacting directly with the mind or energy fields.
It's a form of communication vastly more profound than language.
If it's real, yes. Profoundly different.
And finally, that stark warning, don't enter the rift.
The rift. What is it?
Is it literal? A physical crack in the seabed? The Mariana Trench is geologically active, so a fissure isn't impossible.
Plausible, yes. A literal hazardous zone.
But given the context, voice isn't sound, it's memory. Could rift be metaphorical?
Like a boundary, a tear in perception or reality, a threshold between our world and something else.
A place you shouldn't cross. It sounds like a warning, a plea almost. Territorial.
The word itself is loaded with ominous meaning. Whether physical or metaphorical, it clearly signifies danger, a point of no return, a warning against going deeper into the unknown.
Now, here's where things get even weirder, almost into the realm of, well, impossible.
There's more.
According to the sources, there's an analysis claim about the footage itself, and we have to hedge this carefully.
Okay, what's the claim?
It is said that each time Harker's footage was viewed, different background details would emerge.
Wait, the same footage showed different things on subsequent viewings?
Almost as if the recording itself was changing, mutable. Imagine seeing that the image of shifting backgrounds per playback, a scene that refuses to stay fixed.
Okay, hold on. That fundamentally contradicts how recording media works. Film captures a moment. It doesn't evolve.
Exactly. So if this claim is true, what could possibly explain it?
It implies something extraordinary. Either the footage is somehow interacting with an external, ongoing influence.
Like the entity itself, still influencing the recording.
Or the recording medium itself possesses some property we don't understand. Maybe it's responsive to observation or to these non-sound memory signals Harker mentioned.
It's a reality where just watching something changes it. Or the recording isn't static, but alive somehow.
It's an incredible claim. It suggests the recording isn't just a passive capture, but an active participant, somehow still linked to that deep sea reality.
So connecting back to Harker's line, if the entity communicates via memory,
then perhaps the film reel isn't just storing images, but somehow storing or interacting with these transmitted memories.
And each playback triggers a different aspect, a different layer of that memory, causing the visual details to shift.
That's one way you could try to rationalize such an impossible phenomenon, linking it to the proposed method of communication. It makes the recording itself a conduit, constantly refreshed or altered by these memory signals.
It challenges our whole idea of what a record is. It's not fixed data. It's interactive, subjective almost.
Mm-hmm. If true, it suggests the physics, or the nature of reality, down there operates under completely different rules. That this intelligence can influence not just minds, but the records we make of it.
It blurs the line between observation and participation in a really fundamental way. It's not just a mystery. It's a potential paradigm shift.
It compels you to question if our scientific tools are even adequate. If the very act of recording is influenced, how can we trust the data? It's profoundly unsettling.
Okay, so after that cylinder and Harker's footage surfaced in 86, things went quiet for a long time.
A significant gap, yeah. Over 2.5 decades.
26 years passed before another piece of this puzzle apparently emerged, echoing Harker's experience. It's like the Calyptra incident faded, but the deep it remembered.
That silence is typical, isn't it? Unexplained events, especially ones filed away as accidents, often get buried unless new evidence comes to light.
But then in 2009, something did. And crucially, it came from a completely separate source.
Which is vital for corroboration. It moves it beyond a single, potentially anomalous event.
This was a deep-sea robotics team, operating independently, with no known connection to the Calyptra mission.
And importantly, they were even deeper. The sources say 10.8 kilometers down.
Deeper than Harker's mission, just doing routine exploration, mapping, scientific work with unmanned probes. They weren't looking for Harker or shadows.
That independence is key. Their equipment, highly sensitive robotics, operating decades later, provides a separate potential data point if they found something similar.
It suggests whatever's down there is persistent. Not just a one-off event tied to the Calyptra.
Right. It points towards an ongoing phenomenon in the deepest parts of the trench.
And what they recorded, it was anomalous sounds.
Okay, lots of strange sounds in the deep ocean, though. Biology, geology.
But these weren't clicks or whale songs or tectonic rumbles. Not sonar pings, either.
What were they?
The sources say they were unmistakably human voices.
Human voices? At nearly 11 kilometers down. That's impossible by any known measure.
And described as speaking in broken English. Almost like an attempt to communicate, but distorted, struggling. You can almost imagine hearing those 2009 10.8 kilometer voices, faint, garbled, echoing from the crushing dark.
Okay, human voices at that depth is scientifically baffling. Forget survival, just the physics of sound transmission. And broken English suggests intent, intelligence, not just random noise.
It moves it from just unexplained sound to potential communication from... Well, the impossible.
It directly challenges basic biology, physics, everything we know about human limits.
And the core message they reportedly deciphered from these voices is the most chilling part.
What did they say?
The repeating phrase was, "We're still here, beneath the echo."
Beneath the echo. That resonates directly with the title of one of our main sources.
Exactly. Beneath the echo, Calyptra's deep mystery. It's like the title wasn't just evocative, it was prophetic, or reflecting a message from the deep itself.
It creates this incredibly eerie loop. It suggests the past isn't over, that the Calyptra mystery is still active somehow. Beneath the echo could mean literally deep, but also maybe beneath the fading memory of the event, persisting.
Giving a voice to that unresolved history. But here's the absolute kicker, the most mind-bending part of the 2009 discovery.
Go on.
They performed spectral analysis on these recorded voices.
Voice printing, essentially, matching the unique frequency patterns.
And the analysis allegedly showed a perfect match between one of the voices and Lieutenant James Harker.
Whoa, Harker, the same Harker declared dead back in 1983.
The very same. My brain just struggles to process that. A voice print, a unique identifier, matching someone deceased for 26 years, recorded from 10.8 kilometers down.
Spectral analysis can be very precise. It's used for identification. If that match is definitive.
What does it even mean?
It defies everything we understand about life, death, survival. It implies Harker's continued existence in some form, or at least the persistence of his unique vocal signature.
Consciousness. An imprint. An echo made real.
It forces you into entirely new territory, beyond standard science. It challenges mortality itself. Could consciousness, or its pattern, persist somehow, be recorded and rebroadcast?
So maybe Harker, or part of him, got entangled with whatever he found, became part of that memory signal he talked about.
That's one deeply unsettling interpretation. That his encounter wasn't just fatal, but transformative, an integration into whatever intelligence resides down there.
So he is still here, communicating from the abyss after all this time. It shatters everything.
It moves beyond survival into metamorphosis. His consciousness, perhaps imprinted onto the environment or the entity, echoing back decades later. It resonates with old myths, but presented here with allegedly scientific data, it's staggering.
Okay, we've laid out the narrative fragments, the cylinder, the lost mission, Harker's impossible film, the voices. Let's try and unpack the bigger themes now, starting with abyss folklore.
Right. Humanity has always projected mysteries onto the deep ocean. It's the ultimate unknown on our own planet.
Krakens, sea serpents, Cthulhu. The deep is a natural canvas for our biggest fears and wildest imaginings.
Because it's inaccessible, alien. Folklore fills that void, gives shape to the unknown, often reflecting our anxieties about what lurks beneath the surface, unseen. Think of all the global myths about powerful sea deities or monsters.
So how does this Calyptra story fit in? With its specific details, the massive shadow, the impossible voices, does it change the folklore?
I think it potentially shifts it. It moves from pure myth, pure imagination, towards something with alleged evidence, tangible artifacts, recordings.
It bridges the gap between campfire tales and documented anomaly.
Exactly. It gives a modern, almost techno-thriller spin to ancient fears. The proof, however strange, lends a disturbing veneer of reality to the idea of monstrous or alien intelligences in the deep. It updates the folklore for a scientific age.
And Harker's warning about the rift, that feels very mythological, too.
Oh, definitely. The idea of a rift or gateway to another world, hidden in inaccessible places,
right. That's
a staple of myths worldwide.
A threshold you shouldn't cross.
Precisely. In the Mariana Trench, the deepest place on Earth, a rift could feel like a literal or metaphorical doorway to somewhere else, another reality, another dimension, or just a profoundly alien ecosystem.
Harker's warning taps into that primal fear of trespassing, of disturbing ancient powers or boundaries. It's not just a physical place, it's a warning. Some doors should remain closed.
It frames the deep not just as unknown, but as potentially guarded.
Let's dig into that memory a signal idea again. Harker saying, their voice isn't sound, it's memory.
It's such a profound concept. Communication as direct experience transfer.
We talked about how it could explain the shifting footage, the film reel, absorbing or interacting with these memory signals.
Right, the recording becoming a dynamic canvas for this shared or transmitted consciousness, constantly updating.
It suggests reality, or at least the perception of it, is much more fluid down there.
And it radically redefines information, not as abstract data, but as lived experience, potentially bypassing our normal senses entirely.
Which connects to the 2009 voices and the phrase beneath the echo.
Yeah, if the echo is memory, then beneath the echo implies this lingering persistence. Not just sound waves bouncing back, but consciousness or information resonating through time.
Like the deep itself is a repository of memory, where past events, even consciousness, can remain active, maybe non-physically.
It touches on concepts like a collective unconscious, or maybe information fields existing independently of physical bodies. It suggests the deep isn't just space, but a medium holding enduring memory traces.
Which brings us squarely to the idea of non-human intelligence.
The core of it, really. The sources describe that massive, slow shadow with no known shape.
That description alone screams alien. Not necessarily extraterrestrial, but fundamentally non-terrestrial as we understand life.
It exists outside our biological frameworks. Its very formlessness or unrecognizability suggests an intelligence built on entirely different principles. Cognitive processes, sensory inputs, likely unimaginable to us.
It forces us to confront the possibility of truly alien life right here on Earth, hidden in the extremes.
And if its voice isn't sound, how does it interact? How does it even perceive existence?
Telepathy. Energy manipulation, something quantum, things we don't even have words for.
It's pure speculation, of course. But the point is, it would operate on principles likely beyond our current scientific grasp. Our tools, our models are built for our kind of reality.
How do you even begin to study something like that?
That's the challenge. We lack the framework. Our methods rely on observable, repeatable phenomena within known physics and biology. This seems to exist outside that.
And its potential intent. Harker's "Don't enter the rift" sounds like a warning from something intelligent.
It implies more than just a dangerous natural phenomenon. It suggests awareness, territoriality maybe, a protective instinct.
Which points to a complex consciousness, perhaps ancient, guarding its domain. Not just a creature, but a presence with agency.
Exactly. It suggests an intelligence with its own purposes, its own boundaries, potentially viewing human intrusion as a threat or violation. It elevates the entity from a mere biological mystery to a potential, albeit alien, intelligence with intent. #tagoutro.
So we've clinched deep today. from that fisherman's net pulling up a cylinder through a lost Navy mission, a film that reportedly changes, and voices echoing from the abyss decades later.
It's an incredible collection of claims stitched together from these sources. They offer these tantalizing, deeply strange fragments.
But they leave us with far more questions than solid answers, don't they?
Absolutely. What really happened to the Calyptra? What is that massive shatter? And what does it truly mean to communicate through memory?
The sources piece together a compelling narrative of mystery, but it's a mosaic full of gaps challenging our understanding of, well, almost everything.
Physics, biology, consciousness, the nature of recorded reality itself. These accounts compel us to think about the vast unknown still present right here on our planet.
So here's the final thought for you to take away from this deep dive. If sound can be memory, if there are intelligences in the deep that perceive reality in ways totally alien to us,
then maybe the reality we experience every day, the one we think is solid and objective, maybe it's just one thin layer, one narrow frequency in a much broader, more complex spectrum.
What other echoes, what other signals or realities might be vibrating all around us right now, unseen, unheard, just because we don't have the biological or technological means to perceive them?
It's a profound question about the limits of our perception.
And as we finish, just hold on to that phrase, we're still here. Beneath the echo.
Don't hear it just as words.
Imagine it as this continuous ripple, a vibration moving through the crushing silence, the absolute blackness of the Mariana Trench.
It lingers there, a final chilling whisper from the unknown.
Reminding us of the vast enduring mysteries hidden just beneath the surface of what we think we know.